You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome everybody to Wrestling with Statistics. I am today's host, Craig from ProWrestlingMusings.com, as Ryan is ill with the flu. And joining me today is my very special guest, the godfather of podcasts, the man with 1,004 holds that Chris Jericho famously mocked Dean Malenko with. I'm joined by Mags from Badlands and Why We Watch Podcasts, and many, many more, I'm sure.
Wow, what an introduction. Unfortunately, your listeners are going to have to temper their expectations because whilst I may be prolific in podcasts, I don't think the quality is quite there.
You don't match Chris Jericho's 1,004 holds.
I can do an armbar and a reverse armbar. So I've probably got two holds.
I need to see you listing all the podcasts you do now on an extravagantly large sheet of paper.
I take offence with this kind of like thought that I've got these millions of podcasts. I have three podcasts. I have Why We Watch, I have Badlands, and I have Five Rounds. I just end up being on so many other people's podcasts that I think I kind of get attached to them, and it's like I'm part of that show, and I'm really not. I produce three podcasts.
Okay.
And that's producing inverted commas.
I believe you're doing yourself a disservice, but we'll call it modesty. So how long have you been doing this for, podcasting?
It's coming on now for it's about 2 years. I got my start in podcasting just by being someone who listened to podcasts. Started off with like the bigger name wrestling podcasts like Stone Cold, and then the Conrad Thompson ones. But I kind of drifted away from them when they kind of became almost like adverts. They were almost like always trying to shill something. So that's when I got kind of invested in more fan creator content. But even back then, I wasn't particularly interested in creating a podcast of my own. It's only when I was invited on a couple of podcasts from a couple of friends of mine where I kind of caught the bug. I thought this is something that I could be interested in. It kind of takes my passion for wrestling and it makes more of that. So yeah, I started with Why We Watch as a concept with me and a friend of mine called Mark. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a two-man podcast where we'd speak to other wrestling fans. Mark, unfortunately, real life kind of caught up with him and he just wasn't able to commit. So I took the daunting task of taking the podcast on solo. And yeah, I just literally got the bug. And then I was offered another spot on a network to create another podcast. And then me and my son are both massive UFC fans. And it just felt like a natural progression to like take those conversations we have about UFC and record them and put more content out. So it's just been, something that it's been like a whirlwind almost over the last 2 years. I've been incredibly fortunate to be involved with some huge networks and to get some amazing offers for spots. And I just like talking about wrestling. I just like talking to fans and it affords me that. And I've been able to go on and speak on other people's podcasts and make guest appearances. Yeah, and it's just cool. It kind of like brings the wrestling community together.
Yeah, it's a kind of way of being very involved. I've always kind of thought.
Yeah, absolutely, and I've made some amazing friendships through podcasting with people who ordinarily I would have never have spoken to if it wasn't for having a podcast. So yeah, it's a it's been very, very positive.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. Like, because I'm obviously much newer into it than you are, but you kind of, it's almost like a joke within kind of maybe in media and throughout kind of normal society that, oh, like, you don't make friends on the internet. But mm-hmm. I suppose when you're into a more niche thing like wrestling, then it is a good way of making those connections and being able to share, you know, that kind of interest that you have. That's kind of how I've felt about it the kind of last year since I've been kind of trying to get involved with wrestling Twitter and that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the thing with podcasts is as long as you kind of temper your own expectations, too many people come into podcasting thinking they're going to be a massive success straight away and they're going to get uh-huh. millions of downloads and yeah. they're going to get sponsorships and stuff like that. And it may work like that for the very select few, but for the 99%, it just doesn't work like that. And that's never been kind of my aim. I've been lucky to pick up sponsorships down the road, but it's never been something I've been mm-hmm. actively going out to seek. It's always been about the conversation for me. But yeah, it's just as long as you kind of don't think you're going to be a millionaire off being a podcaster, just do it for the enjoyment and whatever comes, then yeah, it's been a success for me. And
hang on. Sorry, we won't become millionaires off of this.
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately. I mean, you may very well do. Your statistical analysis is way, way beyond anything that I could come up with. So you could definitely come up with a million-dollar kind of idea. But, yeah, for the 99% of us, we definitely won't be millionaires. But the main thing I get from podcasting is inspiring other people to podcast. That's the kind of the happy accident that I judge my podcast on, is that I've had people on my show who have never even ventured into the world of podcasting before, and now the people are going out and making their own podcasts and are getting their own voice across, and that to me is worth all the sponsorships in the world. It's so cool to see wrestling fans just being able to talk and get the voice out there.
Yeah, and they're so many wrestling podcasts now. There are kind of 1,004 of them at least, perhaps. Shall we start to get into the matches?
Yes, let's do it.
So what we're going to be doing today is, this is a New Japan Cup final preview podcast. And I've kind of been on a catch-up sprint over the last few days to watch all the matches, so I was ready for this podcast and ready to preview the final. And this morning I was able to watch Sonata versus Evil and Okada versus Hiromu Takahashi, and that's kind of where we're going to be starting with this podcast today. And both very interesting matches, one perhaps of a higher standard than the other. So we'll start with that one. We're going to start with Los Ingobernables de Japón. I've probably butchered that pronunciation. And Sonata versus Evil, which is perhaps not the two members that a lot of people would have thought might have come out of that side of the bracket. Wrong sports terminology. So we had the match went just over 20 minutes. We had Evil kind of with the striking advantage outdoing Sonata there. Very close with grapples, 4-3 in terms of Sonata. Only one dive, of course, coming from Sonata. 70 seconds compared to 30 seconds in combined submissions. Similar pin attempts, reversal attempts. But the big story from this matchup comes from the fouls. 11 fouls from Evil to 0 from Sonata. Tag team partners taking very, very different tactics. And I think it was perhaps there that the match was settled. What was your thoughts on this match, Max?
Yeah, well, coming from to this match as a wrestling fan, I thought it was absolutely outstanding. I think Sonata's had an amazing tournament mm-hmm. over the last couple of weeks. Probably the second best compared to maybe Takahashi, or even you could throw Shaw in there, who's had some outstanding matches. But looking at it from the statistical side of view, and as someone who's been a New Japan fan for about 4 years now, I've always looked at New Japan as kind of like a hard-hitting, strike-heavy kind of wrestling. But the stats don't really show that. I mean, going through, you've been gracious enough to provide the PowerPoint, and it covers a lot of the matches. Mm. The kind of strikes to minute ratio is really quite low, and the only match that really kind of stands out as a strike every match is were with the Nagata and Suzuki ones. It's interesting, like you said, this match went 20 minutes, and there's a total of just over 60 strikes, which is about what, 3 a minute. It just it doesn't kind of ring true with the thought of it being like a strong style kind of wrestling. It's just something really interesting that I noticed just going through the stats that you've come up with. I like the way that the evil is showing his evil character. Something that it's kind of been missing, I think. Watching Evil over the last year or so, he's kind of been almost floating like in kind of a status quo, and it's cool to see his character work come out, and it's likely that we may have seen the end of the tag team because of how brutal he was to his own tag team partner. But yeah, overall the match I thought was absolutely stellar in a week of amazing matches, because you've got to remember that we've not only had the New Japan Cup, but we've also had AEW Fighter Fest and NXT's Great American Bash, who've been putting out absolute bangers of a show. But it's cool that this match still was a standout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The striking thing's really interesting. Sanada's been an odd one throughout this. He's not a typical Japanese wrestler.
Yeah.
So I've put together an Excel document, which will be available for people to look at. It's really interesting. You can organize all the wrestlers by what kind of like strikes, grapples, dives, etc. And if you organize the wrestlers by their strikes per hour ratio, because some of them had four matches, some of them had one, you kind of need to do it by time. Sanada is the fourth slowest striker in the whole tournament, which is really interesting. Evil is 19 out of 32. So both of them are quite slow. Sanada's got a 66 per hour. So 66 strikes in an hour. You've then got like Suzuki, who's over 300. Nagata, who you mentioned, whose matches I've loved watching just for the barrage of strikes, 246. Takahashi, that you mentioned as well, 131 compared to Sanada's 66. So it's, you know, it's very, very different numbers. So Sanada has kind of gone through the tournament kind of relying on reversals and submissions, interestingly enough.
Yeah, I've noticed in the majority of his matches, he's come out the worst in terms of striking. And like you said, it just doesn't. When you're watching it as a layman's a fan, you would ordinarily think that Sanada would be strike heavy, and watching him, it looks that way. But when it comes down to breaking down the figures, he's not as strike heavy, or he hasn't been in this tournament as he perhaps is in has been in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of wonder if he's going that way with his style. I wonder if it's quite hard to differentiate yourself in Japan, because they're all such good wrestlers. And what I remember Sanada from as I started to watch was those good matches with Zack Sabre Jr. And I just wonder if he's perhaps going that route with his style, if he's becoming more of a mat grappler, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps. Or it could also lead into a storyline that I've been pitching for a long while with Sanada, that he kind of has become despondent as a member of LIJ. He's currently the only one who doesn't have a belt. He's not even in the shout for winning a title. And is he getting to the point where he's not interested in being a part of the faction anymore? So that's coming through in his wrestling style.
Yeah, definitely. Especially after this one, he was the guy that was sticking his hand out at the beginning of the match, and then ended it getting kicked between the legs and hit with steel chairs. So yeah, it's very, very different approaches from the supposed tag team partners. So yeah, moving on. These images will be available as you're watching the podcast. If we look at the kind of flow of offense, there's a lot more blue for Evil than red for Sanada. And then when we go further, the kind of the 5 minute periods of this, I would say, is very interesting in that there's a big advantage for Evil at the start of the match. And then the two of them are almost neck and neck before Evil jumps up there at the end as he starts using perhaps more nefarious means.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, but every time there's an Evil peak, it's quickly followed by a Sanada peak, and getting further towards the end, it's actually Sanada who seems to be taking like the impetus until like you said, we get to the point where Evil introduces the chairs and the dick kicks, and then that's it. It's game over.
And it was like proper brutal kind of. Yeah. Like, it wasn't a swing from quite far away. They were the most calculated that you've perhaps ever seen.
I mean, those Japanese chairs, they are padded, but the fact that he broke the chairs that it was brutal. And it was a side of Evil that we've perhaps needed to see for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's a good point. It maybe differentiates him from the rest of the wrestlers in his stable. Just one last thing on this match. We've also got just a straight up bar chart of the different moves that they used, and that this perhaps shows the difference between the two most clearly. We've got a clear strike advantage for Evil, but then an even clearer submission, doubling Evil's submissions, is Sanada, and then there's the fouls as well. Big chunk for Evil, and with nothing in return from Sanada. He was very much taken advantage of, I would suggest, by his tag team partner.
Absolutely. But I think the most striking thing on this is how evenly matched in terms of actual offense the two guys were. To say it was a one-sided finish and a very very much an Evil victory. Sanada gave as good as he got, but just he approached the match from a different kind of angle.
Yeah, so it's interesting. They've booked the tag team partners very neck and neck, like literally neck and neck. But then for Evil living up to his name to kind of sucker punch his well-meaning tag team partner. Good match, as you said so eloquently at the beginning of that. But my match of the night, maybe even match of the tournament, there's an argument for Sho versus Takahaki. I also very much enjoyed Suzuki and Nagata, but this one for me was a return. This was what I think a lot of people wanted when we were pining for New Japan. Okada Takahashi for me was a tremendous affair. How did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I thought it was everything that we could have expected from a Takahashi versus Okada match. I mean, Okada has been 1A or 1B of the best wrestlers in the world for such a long time now, and Takahashi is just an absolute enigma. But going back to that, the tournament as a whole, I always thought that last year's G1 would be hard to top. I felt that tournament had absolutely no filler. I think all the way through the tournament, there was 37-5 plus Dave Meltzer star matches. And for this tournament, it almost felt like a butchered tournament. We wouldn't normally see the Young Lions involved. We certainly wouldn't see a lot of the junior heavyweights involved. Mm-hmm. But for a tournament that's been like thrown together, we've had some absolutely outstanding matches from people who wouldn't normally put on such great matches. I mean, Togi Makabe has put on some absolutely stellar matches. Tori Yano, obviously, we know him as a great comedy wrestler, but his match with Hiromu was absolutely amazing. It was exactly how a comedy match should go down. I think the whole the whole of the tournament, probably aside from Yoshihashi.
I liked Yoshihashi in this.
he's just never connected with me. Never been a huge fan of him. He's very serviceable. I mean, he can do stuff that I certainly can't do in a wrestling room, but he's just never been like someone who I've really got invested in. But yeah, I mean, the likes of Tachi's been putting on banger of a match after banger of a match.
No, Tai Chi has been the worst.
What?
I'm really sorry.
How dare
Tai Chi has been horrific. Right,
this podcast is over. Lord Tai Chi.
Right, hold on. So I've picked up a little bit of an issue with fouls in this. There's like evil Gedo, like Tai Chi. Tai Chi, based on, like, and obviously it's subjective, like, what a foul is. Fouls are kind of things that the ref breaks up, has to happen behind his back, or, like, use of, like, barricades and stuff on the outside. Based on the way that I've been judging fouls, Tai Chi has committed 53 fouls in his 3 matches. And second best is 28. His matches have been littered with just nonsense.
Yes, but it's been glorious nonsense, and we've seen Tachi really stand up, and I think he's coming out of this. He was always seemed to be a lower mid-card wrestler, and I think he's getting pushed to that upper mid-card, even into like the lower main card kind of picture.
How he was booked here, yeah, absolutely. It's just like I struggled seeing him beat Kota Ibushi.
that was clear. I mean, that and the Tanahashi was clearly done to further the storyline for the tags. And I think that's a good thing that New Japan do, is they don't just focus on the winner, and they kind of be bringing quite a few different storylines through the tournament. So I've got to say I'm pleased with how Tachi has come across.
Okay, interesting. So going back to Okada Takahashi, almost evens in strikes. However, big difference, Okada almost doubling Takahashi's strike down, so they kind of really placed the kind of heavyweight moniker on him there, and they kind of followed through that as well with the grapples. He doubled Takahashi again in terms of grapples. They were level for diving. Okada 107 seconds of submission compared to Hiromu's zero. Dives and pins a little bit more from Takahashi. He was more eager to pin, had a couple more reversals in there. He hit a time bomb as well, which Okada had to kick out of. Yeah. For me, the stats don't quite do Takahashi justice here. I thought he didn't look out of place at all competing against Okada. Not in the slightest.
I agree, and I don't think he's looked out of place in all the heavyweights that he's faced with Yano and Ishii. I think he's definitely, the heavyweights have definitely allowed, or the booking has allowed Takahashi to really show his kind of from underneath style wrestling chops. The fact that he's outstruck Okada is just a testament to how much faith they've got in Takahashi. This was just a phenomenal match, and I'm really enjoying the Okada adding the submission aspect to his game. Watching over the last few years or so, you can really see he kind of will take one aspect of his wrestling and focus on that for an extended period of time. And obviously now we're getting submissions. I think he's won the majority of his matches with a submission, which is
all of them, I believe.
All of them. Interesting. So yeah, it's good that he's kind of adding that string to his bow.
Yeah. I was almost disappointed that, because that had happened throughout the tournament, I was kind of hoping that he would have to hit the Rainmaker to beat Takahashi. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I wonder if they're keeping that for Evil or another time. But yeah, I was kind of wondering if they might pay Takahashi that kind of respect. Although the way that he went down wasn't, I mean, he was very far from anything like buried or just pushed to the side. The other thing that I'm going to come back to that you mentioned before that I thought was worth mentioning, The kind of thrown together nature of this tournament, where we saw the juniors and also maybe the New Japan dads, as they're often referred to, being a bit more prominent in this. I've really enjoyed a lot, like Makabe, as you said, Nagata, and then Ishimori, Sho, and Takahashi. For me, have been like the dynamics between the older guys and the guys from the other division having to go against the established heavyweight guys. I thought it's been really, like, really added to this.
Yeah, I mean, you don't normally see in singles competition the heavyweights and the juniors mix it up. You kind of get some clashes in the multi-mans, but the multi-mans tend to be quite quick matches anyway, so you may only see a couple of minutes at a time. The fact that these have been having 10, 15, 20-minute matches, it's been a breath of fresh air and seeing those kind of clash of styles. I mean, Ishii's obviously a big, bruisy, beefy, hard-hitting wrestler, and to see him kind of like mix it up with the light heavyweights in Desperado and Takahashi has been really cool to see, and it shows how versatile the New Japan talent have been.
I don't know if they might add that to. I wouldn't do that in like the G1 and lose the divisions, because I think it adds to the product, but maybe in the cup going forward it might be a good spot to have it.
I mean it was always a tournament of circumstance. They're just using whatever wrestlers were available, but if anyone's
been able Jado.
But even with the talent they've used, it's been one of the best tournaments in recent memory. So props to all the people who've entered, even Yoshihashi.
Wow, was that difficult for you?
Yeah, I felt dirty saying that.
I mean, you've blown your credibility though with that filthy Tai Chi comment.
We'll see. When he's IWGP at least Intercontinental Champion in the near future, you will be eating crow.
I wouldn't be shocked, like how he's been booked. Moving on to the flow of offense, I suppose it kind of shows off how the match went quite well. It is quite even, but with kind of slight advantages for Okada here and there. There was quite a lengthy chop battle within this, which Takahashi also did with Ishii.
Yep.
I think that's been Takahashi's character throughout this, very much kind of like, I don't care if you're bigger than me, I'm going to, you know, just front up to you anyway, which I thought it's been highly enjoyable.
Yeah, definitely. The only outlier of that was when he was petrified of facing Yano, and he came out with the hard hat. That was absolutely amazing. The character work that Takahashi pulls out is quality. But it goes to show that Takahashi has not been afraid of taking these heavyweights head on, and I think that'll be something interesting to bring up when he gets his match with Naito. Hopefully that. He's not just the kind of junior heavyweight of the group, but he's a prominent member of LRJ.
Would you put him in the G1? Just him?
It would be setting a huge precedent. I wouldn't. I don't think you'd want to kind of muddy the waters of the G1. Because hopefully by the time the G1 comes around, we'll have almost a full roster of wrestlers back. So I think we'll get back to the kind of the standard where the juniors have their tournaments and the heavyweights have their tournaments. I mean, if the situation is still as it is now, I would be more than happy for him to be in it. I mean, seeing him against someone like the likes of Moxley would be an amazing match.
Mm. Wow, that is a great shout. I immediately want to see that.
But ordinarily, I think if the heavyweights are available, I think keeping it to like a heavyweight-centric tournament, it'd be better, I think, for me anyway.
Okay, interesting. Then looking, we've got the kind of the periods, chunking the match into 5-minute chunks. Again, although it's not close, it's Okada dominant almost enormously so. A 1 5-minute period going to Takahashi, but Okada very much controlling the match and Takahashi hanging on would be how I would read that.
Yeah, what stands out to me in this flow of offense was how consistent over the match that Takahashi was. I mean, obviously you've got Okada who's had a good first 5 minutes, a better 10 minutes, then a bit of a lull. There's like kind of peaks and troughs where Takahashi's it's fairly even across the board, and even like raising to the last 5 minutes or so when he kind of does drop off and Okada picks up the victory. But I think it shows again how much kind of faith they're putting in Takahashi that he's had such a strong showing against arguably the greatest wrestler to have ever stepped in a ring.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. And I think, a lot of people are disappointed that he didn't win this, but based on what you were saying about the G1 and the way that New Japan like to separate their divisions, maybe it was just a step too far for him to win this. And the way that they have booked him was about as close that they felt they could push him without kind of undermining their structure.
Yeah, I mean, when I was doing some bracketology and like kind of predicting it, I felt that getting up to Ishii would have been the kind of the perfect level for Takahashi, because once you get into like the quarterfinals and the semifinals, it's where you want the tournament to become a bit more serious, where the winner deserves it rather than kind of like comedy in his way to the final. The match against Ishii was outstanding, but I think this was the perfect way to kind of finish Takahashi's tournament. He's had some outstanding matches. He's really shown that he can hang with the big boys, but ultimately the better wrestler went through.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last thing on that match, we've got the kind of the bar chart, which just really visualizes the comparison of the two wrestlers. And you know, you could, obviously there's the huge, like Takahashi didn't feel comfortable, or they didn't book him as, you know, being in a position to try any submissions with Okada. And then there's also the gaps in strike downs and grapples, which, you know, makes sense for the heavyweights. And then the strikes, Takahashi using more, but Okada's were heavier. So, you know, it's a very New Japan lightweight versus heavyweight, where the lightweight is very much leveling up to challenge, but it's still illustrating the class kind of the hierarchy.
Yeah, absolutely, and you can see that again with the total offense, where it was heavily weighted for Okada. But I think the bar chart kind of rubber stamps the fact that whilst Takahashi wasn't up to the level of Okada, he gave it a really good shot, and the fact that he's been able to match and even better some of Okada's statistics is, again, it's tantamount to the fact that they've got a lot of faith in Takahashi as a potential heavyweight.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sure you, as I would, be very excited to see him make that leap in 2-3 years' time. He's very convincing, very. One of the most, if not the most exciting up-and-coming wrestler, I'd suggest, on that roster.
Yeah, and it's been that way for the last couple of years. His character work is above reproach, and I think that if he didn't get the injury with Dragon Lee and was out for such a long, long time, he'd probably be closer to being a heavyweight than he is now. The guy is just an absolute wrestling phenomenon, and it's really, really good to be in the kind of generation where you get to watch this guy wrestle, because he's absolutely stunning.
Perfect. So that kind of takes us to the final, and we have Kazuchika Okada progressing to face Evil. So on the preview graphic, we've got singles matches 2020, 6-1 for Okada, 4-1 for Evil. Very similar, both obviously 4-0 in the cup. Interesting ring time. Okada's wrestled about 20 minutes longer than Evil in this competition. And then we've got things like total offense and then per hour rates. When we look at the total offense, Okada is ahead of Evil in almost everything, but that is largely because of the ring time difference. when you kind of correct that for the ring time difference, we see Evil is more reliant on submissions. He's having to reverse more. He fouls and taunts more, probably to no one's surprise. whereas Okada is better with grapples, strike downs, and strikes. Okada tends to take and give out more damage than Evil, so his matches are more intense, whereas Evil is wrestling perhaps at a slower rate. But where the ring times do come into it is Okada has totals of offense more, so he's kind of sharpening his sword more. Mm-hmm. But the kind of flip side of that is where Evil has taken 148 moves, Okada has taken 215. So, you know, he's well-versed perhaps, but it's whether or not that's going to pay off when you take into consideration the amount of punishment that he has taken in comparison to Evil.
Yeah, I think having the few days kind of break might negate that. Going back to the booking, I think mm-hmm. It would be hard pressed to find anyone who actually booked Evil to make it to the finals.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people's favourite on that side of the bracket were the likes of Shingo, were the likes of Sonata, maybe even Ibushi. Mm-hmm. But so to see Evil come through, it is a refreshing change. I think he's faced the card a couple of times and always come up short. So it'll be interesting to see if this evil can kind of like get over that hump of Okada.
So do you think it's going to be that kind of idea in the Evil's main the main difference between the two of them will be down to the tactics, and obviously Okada Okada's used four things within the tournament that were with the rules. I think a couple of that is just throwing people into barriers, whereas Evil has used 28 kind of maneuvers, methods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not just putting people into barriers. He's hitting people over the head with steel chairs and going low.
Yeah, I think that has to be his approach. He used that approach against Sonata, who you would argue is the better technical wrestler of mm-hmm. the tag team. And Okada's obviously on another level above Sonata. So if Evil is going to have any chance of winning this match, he's probably not going to be able to out-wrestle Okada. He's going to have to go to the well and maybe like weaken Okada with fouls, whether it's with chairs, with barrier shots, and kind of like break him down rather than out wrestling.
Okay, so Evil, no chance unless he's Evil.
I think being Evil gives him a better chance. I wouldn't uh-huh. want to rule him out of the match. I think anybody, the sun shines on a dog any time. But and technically, he's still a very, very good wrestler. So there's always that chance that Okada slips up. But as we've seen throughout this tournament, Okada's been damn near untouchable. He's been so solid. Adding that submission to his game has kind of like increased his repertoire almost. Mm-hmm. Evil is going to have to pull something out of the bag to topple this new version of Okada. So I would fully expect Evil to revert to what's got him to the dance in the first place, and that's the fouls.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last bit of this graphic is a complete mess up on my end, but maybe a happy mistake here. So this was supposed to be showing off how much of each match's offense the two had. And so Okada is 52% and Evil is 54% of their respective matches. And so when you put them together in this kind of combined bar chart graph, it kind of shows that Evil might end up having about 51-52% of the offense mm-hmm. based on their prior matches. So that would be like a guess. This also suggests that based on how much each of them reverse, Evil might have to, if he's got any chance in this, he would have to reverse more so than Okada. And then when you put both their strike rates together, it's suggesting that Okada's hitting will be like almost 4 to 5% more so than Evil's. Can we take anything from that, Mags, or is it just kind of the good versus evil story, the fouls versus the accomplished wrestler?
I think this shows how evenly matched they are in terms mm-hmm. of reversal rate, strike downs, and offense in general. But it shows the kind of style of offense that makes the difference, and obviously we've seen that Evil using fouls has weakened his opponent, so his offense has kind of had more impact. But I just think that he's going to have to pull something out of the bag, and it's going to be the difference of the submissions again. I think with Okada, he's gonna keep to that well again. As I said, with Evil using the fouls that brought him to the final, the submissions have brought Okada to the final. So it would be kind of a weird way to go if he didn't revert to that in this match as well. So Evil's gonna have to find a way to combat those submission attempts and those seconds and utilize. Whether he utilizes fouls and he wrestled to break a card down and pick up the victory, who knows? But it's going to be an interesting fact that it's a really interesting dichotomy of how they both got to the final. Okada with really good technical skill and Evil just literally laying waste to everyone and kind of cheating his way to the final.
Yeah. It's been interesting as well because I suppose, as you mentioned, not a lot of people had Evil to get this far. So that they have booked him really viciously and really strongly, if you think about it retrospectively, especially with what he did to Yoshihashi, who I would also suggest had been booked quite strongly, but was in the end used as a tool to make Evil look vicious and careless.
Yeah, I think it was also kind of... A lot of it was down to how the quadrants were set up. If you looked at the right side quadrant, it was very stacked in terms of talent.
Yeah.
Then the top of the left again was stacked, and that bottom left quadrant was outside of Goto, perhaps was quite a weak quadrant. So Evil has obviously done well to come out of that quadrant. But yeah, it's just going to be a fun, interesting kind of like mix of styles. I think Evil has been he's benefited from this kind of pandemic era where New Japan have almost kind of wiped the board clean and started afresh. I think going into the wrestling before the coronavirus started, Evil didn't have much of a storyline going. There wasn't there. And now he's heading into to potentially getting a title shot after winning this match. So he's really benefited from this like kind of wiping the slate clean, whereas someone like Sonata has not benefited at all. So between Evil and probably Takahashi, they've really come out as strong in this tournament, and it'll be interesting to see where they go from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been an odd tournament in that brackets went out the window early on, perhaps when Nagata beat Suzuki or when Sho beat Takagi. It's been interesting. It's been an odd one, but like the surprises have been there, the good matches have been there, and I'm sure Okada versus Evil next weekend will be within the same kind of story.
Yeah, I think so. And again, you mentioned Shingo. I had Shingo pinned as the winner or potential winner. I think in the lead up to the virus, he was arguably one of the strongest wrestlers in, if not in New Japan, in the world. He had an outstanding year, and I thought that this would be his time to kind of push on, come out of that junior heavyweight division and really make a name for himself in the heavyweight division. But obviously, he's been a big victim of this kind of resetting of the storylines. It's cool that he's getting a storyline with Sho. I think they've confirmed that Sho's going to challenge for that NEVER title.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, because the matches that they put on have been absolutely stellar, and you could literally hook that up to my veins, and I've watched that all day long. It's such a good mix. Shaw's always been obviously the standout kind of person in Roppongi 3K, and then we've got yours kind of like the Marty Jannetty of the group, which is it's a disservice really, because yours is absolutely a stellar talent.
Okay, so we're going to leave New Japan Cup there. I think as you were saying about Dominion, just to confirm the matches, I believe it's Sho versus Shingo. Mm-hmm. And then there's the tag match. What were they calling themselves? The Golden Aces, Ibushi and Tanahashi versus Dangerous Techers, which is Tai Chi and ZSJ, Zack Sabre Jr. And the only other match I'm aware of right now is there'll be the Naito versus the winner of this. Have I missed anything out?
No, that's the only ones I'm aware of.
Yeah. I'm guessing that something will happen at the final in maybe a tag match with Takahashi and somebody.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe someone will challenge Takahashi for his junior heavyweight title. It's going to be a fun next few months for New Japan.
Yeah, it's been quite exciting, kind of this tournament, and then all the possibilities going forward. And I think a lot of people almost forget that John Moxley had that title.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when they stripped him because he couldn't make it back late last year, and then obviously he won it back. He's kind of one of the two wrestlers in AEW with Jericho, who's that bridge with New Japan. So hopefully, in 2020 into 2021, we'll get some more kind of like crossover between the two companies. That's my kind of dream, I suppose. Get some more AEW talent coming over for the likes of the G1 and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much for coming. Thank you for lending your credibility to the pod.
Very little credibility than I had.
as a first, well, you've ruined it now with your Tai Chi takeaways. But anyway, thank you for being the first guest to the pod. Thank you for saving me as Ryan abandoned me to deal with his perfectly reasonable excuse. Thank you for coming on. Is there anything you would like to point people in the direction of whilst you're here for our two and a half listeners?
Well, first of all, it's been an honor to come on the show. I've said to you many times, I really love the way you deep dive into the statistics, and the fact that you're putting out a regular podcast is amazing. I think I've mentioned to you, it's one of the few YouTube videos that I don't watch at twice the speed, because I don't want to kind of miss any of the statistics.
Which I've taken as a big compliment to us.
It's a massive compliment. It really, really is. It's cool to see you getting your statistics and your voice out there. In terms of me, I just keep on keeping on. I've got Why We Watch, where I talk to wrestling fans and creators about why they love this wacky sport of people pretending to fight in their underwear. Then I've also got a podcast called Badlands, where again I talk to wrestling fans, but this time we focus on creating Mount Rushmores or top tens of certain topics in wrestling. I share that podcast with my podcast wife, Mr. Paul Tolley. Me and my son, we have a UFC based podcast where we look at the UFC events of the weekend and kind of break down what we thought went down. Yeah, so you can find all my stuff out on my Twitter at DJ Kirby. You can find all those podcasts wherever you choose to listen to podcasts. Check it out. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome. Badlands and Mount Rushmore podcast is a really kind of it's just a nice wrestling. It's like not too hard going. It's quite entertaining. Your Why We Watch series I really like, in that it's more kind of personal. You're getting to know people, and it's just quite not the best vocabulary here, but it's just a nice podcast. I would say it's quite friendly and personable.
I think the standout things with the podcast that I create are the ideas are so simple. Why We Watch is literally just a chat about wrestling. It's about how each person took a different route to get to being a wrestling fan. And with Badlands, everybody has a Mount Rushmore of wrestlers. It's one of the most subjective kind of topics in wrestling. There's no right or wrong answer. Whoever really appeals to you may not appeal to someone else, but there's no argument there. What you like is what you like, and we kind of just take that and tweak it a little bit and have a different topic every week. And yeah, it brings a little bit of fun back into wrestling, because with wrestling social media and especially wrestling Twitter, sometimes that fun can kind of be eroded away. And it's cool to just sit down for an hour or so and just have a laugh and just chat about the silly side of wrestling.
Wonderful. We'll leave it there. I've been and still am Craig from ProWrestlingMusings.com. You'll find us on Twitter. All the links will be in the podcast notes. Video version there if you want to see the visuals, and use the website if you're listening on the move. Thank you very, very much for listening.